From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Boeing 787 Dreamliner is a big deal to Boeing, and Boeing is a big deal to American manufacturing, exports, and pride. $200 million a pop for the Dreamliner, 50 sold, 800 plus on order. And right now, every Dreamliner in service in the world, grounded. Product rollouts come with glitches. But with the stakes this high, no one's glad to see them. Certainly not glad to see Dreamliners on fire. This hour on Point, Boeing's Dreamliner mess. You can join the conversation. What do you see here? A little glitch? Something more? Are we too skittish in our innovation? Or somehow too sloppy? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPointRadio, where you can also see a gallery of Boeing 787 Dreamliner photos. Let's listen back just a little bit. Here's a promotional video from 2007 for the 787 Dreamliner. Boeing highlighting the many technical innovations of the plane, how they would improve passengers' experience in the air.
The idea behind the Boeing 787 Dreamliner is simple yet revolutionary. To immerse the passenger in a pleasurable, relaxing, and healthy environment, and then to build the world's most technologically advanced commercial aircraft around that environment.
And then this, earlier this month at Boston's Logan Airport, the pilot for Tokyo-bound Japan Air Flight 007, one of Boeing's 787 Dreamliners, was told by the control tower to shut off his engines and remain grounded when a large fuel leak, apparently, sprung onto the runway.
Japan Air 7 Heavy, we're going to send an fire engine truck out to your aircraft to make sure everything's okay, but it appears that there is fuel coming from your left wing.
Japan Air 7, you mean fuel leak from left wing?
Japan Air 7 Heavy, there's a large amount of fuel spilling from the back of your aircraft, and we do have the fire truck coming to you.
Nobody wants to hear that. And then it came to the passengers. Last week, one passenger's flight aboard Boeing 787 Dreamliner was grounded by the FAA in Chicago. She was on her way to Poland.
They canceled the flight because they had a few fires on the planes, and we were wondering about that. We got some message like in the afternoon that there was another fire.
Oh boy, fires on the planes. And yes, everybody was wondering about that. We'll go to Boeing country in Washington State in a minute. But first to Washington, D.C., Matthew Wald, reporter for the New York Times, joins us. He covers aviation and has been reporting on the troubles with the Boeing 787 Dreamliner. Matthew Wald, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Richard Abulafia. He's vice president of analysis for the Thiel Group, an aerospace and defense research group. Richard Abulafia, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
Matthew, where do we stand on the groundings? I mean, I'm looking down the list here of airlines where they're grounded: Air India, Air Nippon, Ethiopian, you know, Lot Polish, Qatar, United Airlines, and right on every single one. Who holds the trigger on when they begin to get back in the air? Is it the FAA or somebody else?
Probably the pattern these things normally take is that the manufacturer, in this case a very able, technically minded company, will come up with a proposed solution, put it to the FAA, and the FAA will say yes or no, and others will fall into line. And that'll happen because it's primarily an American certificated airplane. Pardon the bad grammar, but the FAA calls it certificated. But they can't get to that point until they know what the problem is, and so far they haven't said. And they may, in fact, not thoroughly know what the problem is.
The problem with the batteries. Richard Abulafia, you said, will the 787 recover from this mess? Probably, but there are no guarantees. Really? After everything that's been put into this plane, no guarantee it'll be back in the air, Richard?
Well, I think it will be back in the air. It will fly revenue service. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, there are no guarantees of anything. But you look at the history of planes that have had their certification yanked, just basically two, and both were really dire circumstances, far more dire than this.
It's been a long time since this has happened.
Yes, that's right. 1979 with the DC-10, and before that, really the 50s with the British Comet jet, the world's first jetliner. The fact that both of those involved hundreds of dead bodies, and this one involved no injuries or fatalities of any note, shows that we've come a long way in redundancy and safety. But the point is that even those planes later went on to have relatively healthy production runs. At least the DC-10 did. The Comet had to be reborn as the Comet 4 and still had a few years of production left in it.
Matthew, I mean, that's many years since the DC-10 had its certification pulled, and much more dire run-up to that pulling. Is there controversy about the fact that these have been grounded, or is there a general consensus that the Dreamliner should be on the ground now?
Well, clearly we pulled the trigger earlier now. We pulled the trigger in anticipation of a problem instead of in reaction to a problem. We have a much lower tolerance for aviation safety problems than we used to. Next month, it'll be 4 years since the last U.S. airliner crash. That's an unprecedentedly long period. Mm-hmm. It's now safer to fly than it is to stay at home. You could stay at home and get killed in a house fire. A truck could miss a turn on the road and run into your living room and kill you. Those things don't happen on airplanes. And in that mode, we get to the point of grounding something a lot sooner. We've also, we've got a fairly aggressive government agency here at this point, the Department of Transportation, at work. But if you look at it in the long haul, and in-flight fires are nothing to joke about, but if you look at it in the long haul, they may get to the point where they understand the problem, they fix the problem, and this plane goes on to have a very successful commercial run. And 5 years from now, you'll barely remember this.
I guess everybody hopes so, at least everybody who's not competing with Boeing. But in-flight fires are no joke. And this one goes back to the battery. A battery we're going to hear in a moment from Dominic Gates with the Seattle Times, Matthew. But he's got a story today saying that this battery, in a test back in 2006, blew up in its Arizona lab and burned down the building, a 10,000-square-foot building.
Yeah, well, wait a second. It might be the battery. It might be part. The battery is actually part of a system, and we have not excluded at this point the system that manages the battery. Batteries, these are more complicated than what goes in a flashlight. There's a computerized system that manages the battery, and the problem could be in that also. You really have to nail what the problem is. Batteries store increasing amounts of energy, and if you release that energy too fast, you end up with a fire or explosion. There's a wonderful YouTube video of exploding batteries, including one laptop sitting on the floor at the terminal in LAX. Somebody's plugged it into a wall outlet, and it just bursts into flame while a bunch of passengers are standing around waiting for their connection. You can get into trouble with batteries.
And that is what has happened here. They're volatile. They're very potent. The electrical system is at the heart of the Dreamliner innovation package. I want to look much more closely at the battery issue here. But Richard Abulafia, you've written that there were some assumptions behind the big enablers of the Dreamliner's innovative profile. And there were three big ones. And you say none of them have worked out so very well. Take us there, Richard.
Well, you look at the three big changes. One is using carbon fiber reinforced plastics for the primary structures of the plane. Previously, they'd been used in secondary structures like ailerons. Now you've got the entire body of the plane.
So aluminum out and essentially a very fancy plastic in.
Right. And so far, the jury is out. You're probably going to save some weight. It's probably going to be a better way of manufacturing. But there's an awful lot we don't know, and it has created problems in terms of lightning strike. They've had to make a few structural modifications, things like that. The overall economics of building a plane out of CFRP, we just don't know quite yet. The second big enabler was the more electric aircraft architecture, which has been around since World War II. It's not a shockingly new concept that you can use electricity to power more of the plane systems rather than hydraulics or pneumatics. But does it pay its way? We don't know. The resolution, of course, of this would help determine its success.
And obviously for that, you've got to have a potent electrical source.
Yes, that's right. People hear batteries and maybe they think, oh, it's powered by batteries. Of course, it isn't. These are backup batteries for emergencies. But at the end of the day, it is important to have that ability to quickly come online with a lot of power in the event the six generators fail.
And the third piece here was outsourcing. I mean, this was put together really unlike with a degree of outsourcing that really outstripped anything that came before it, Richard.
Yeah, previously manufacturing had been heavily outsourced, but this was the first time that really a heavy element of the design and integration of the work had been cascaded down to the major industrial risk-sharing partners, Mitsubishi, Fuji, and Kawasaki Heavy Industries, Vought Aircraft, Spirit, Aerosystems, and Finn Mechanica. And some were absolutely up to the task. They figured out how to become sort of junior integrators and designers, and did great. And others really stumbled very badly, which resulted in work that was not complete, that was traveled work, and resulted in a rather large number of aircraft, 50 planes being built or more before the aircraft entered service, which is kind of a recipe for manufacturing trouble.
Because why?
Well, you've got all these aircraft that are or components, structural segments, that are being sent up to the Everett facility. And very often the work wasn't complete. And then on top of that, you had to make additional modifications for any design changes that might have come down from the top as a result of the lessons learned in the certification process. Now, all of this means you're doing rework. All of this means you're doing retrofits, modifications. You know, you can
these
have
weren't
all
just
kinds
parts
of,
they were being sent. These were whole segments of the plane that would then be kind of strapped together.
Right, except that some of them weren't showing up completed with all holes drilled properly and everything, so Boeing had to go over it with a fine-tooth comb. And, of course, that's very difficult given the circumstances and the additional retrofit requirements associated with the certification process. Now, the real complication, of course, is you really want to get an assembly line going, just like Henry Ford taught us. You know, it's you want to get that good cadence going to eliminate defects and drive down costs. And this was a very difficult process, given the way it was done.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Boeing's Dreamliner mess and the grounding of a superplane. Here's the sound of Boeing's 787 Dreamliner taking off. This was in Berlin for a test flight, June 2011. All kinds of innovation in and around this airplane and a lot riding on it for Boeing, the biggest exporter in the United States. Then, last week, here's a passenger aboard a Tokyo-bound All-Nippon Airways Dreamliner flight in Japan. Says was shaken after an emergency landing due to battery malfunction. Here he is, interpreted by the BBC.
As we were going down for the emergency landing, the cabin attendant's voice was actually shaking. So I realized this was pretty bad news.
And on January 11th, here's U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood announcing a review of the Dreamliner in the wake of concern over the safety of the aircraft 5 days before the plane was grounded by the FAA.
We are concerned about recent events involving Boeing 787. That's why today we are announcing that we are conducting a comprehensive review of the design and production of the Boeing 787.
Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood. Richard Abulafia joins us from the Teal Group in Washington today. Matthew Wald from the New York Times in Washington. Let's go to Joe in Framingham, Massachusetts. Joe, thanks. You're on the air.
Tom, how are you?
Okay.
The 787 relies far more than any other airliner in operation on electronics to function rather than hydraulics and mechanical systems.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same issue that Toyota ran into, is that Boeing has had a long history.
Toyota with its gas pedal, you mean, Joe, that whole blow up?
In other words, Toyota went very much doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They switched from hydraulics and mechanical systems, which they had years of experience, to electronic systems. And with these, especially as one of the people mentioned, if you've built like 50 planes and you haven't tested these things as a system, this requires not only, you know, how these things function. We all know from personal computers how many times we have problems we can't explain with computers.
Mm-hmm.
That as you go from, you know, systems that you had before, where they were either mechanical or hydraulic, Boeing's had, you know, since the beginning of the century, you know, those experiences. But Toyota had the same problem, is that they're going from areas where they have huge experience to areas where they have very little experience.
But still, and things have to move forward, don't they, Joe? I mean, you know,
yes,
a horse was maybe more reliable than the first automobile, but we didn't stick with horses.
Right, but if you move too quickly and you don't have the experience, you can run into problems. And I'm making the analogy between the same thing, too. A very good company, very good engineering, very good thought process. But when you start to get these in larger production, you start to come up with issues that are failures that unless you test it as a system, you really can't tell in its individual components. And when you start to put these things together as a system, you start to see that failures that would never come up, say, in building one of these,
right,
start to come up in building more of them.
Joe, let us look at just that. Matthew Wald, what about the whole system here, the reliance on electronics instead of hydraulics, mechanical, pneumatics, you know, the good old analog stuff? Does it look like it can be reliable enough?
Boeing did something unusual here, which is that they put in many, many, many test flights. And, for example, they went very early to get certification to fly this airplane long distances over water, long distances from the nearest suitable airport. Usually you can't get that on a plane till it's been in service for a while.
Mm-hmm.
This one they did extensive testing on. It's true, the more monkeys sit at typewriters and churn something out, the laws of chance say you'll get something different out of it. But I wanted to make a related point, which is that aviation is evolutionary. And as the new head of the FAA said yesterday, aviation has always been on the cutting edge since the Wright brothers. Other airplanes use composites. This one uses more of them. Other airplanes substitute electric drive for hydraulic drive. This airplane does more of it. Other airplanes have been built with outsourcing. This airplane does more of
mm-hmm.
it. There's nothing different in concept here. It's just pushing the envelope a little more. And really, there isn't anything surprising about that. I would not go out and buy a laptop that didn't push the envelope and wasn't more advanced than the old one.
Let's get a call from Judy, just pulling out of Boston's Logan Airport, where the first problems appeared. We heard that tape. Judy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I just left Logan. I dropped my daughter, who's headed back to Singapore. She flew over on the 787 and said it was amazing, fabulous plane. Best flight she's ever had. However, she's been delayed going back because she's supposed to return on the 787. As a parent, I'm thrilled that they grounded this thing because obviously I have a child that's been flying around on them. So I'm thrilled that they grounded it.
She was happy with her flight, though. I mean, there's more room. He's got these big windows, cathedral ceilings in the cabin and all the rest. What were you thinking when you heard this? Yeah.
I'm sorry. She said the windows are actually filter the light based on what you touch on the touchpad.
It sounds pretty great. Did you have feel a little odd when she flew in and then here come these reports of trouble?
Yeah, I was very grateful that she made it in one piece and very grateful again when they grounded the plane.
Judy, good luck to her. Thanks for calling. I mean, Matthew, Richard, we've got a lot of supportive listeners here of Boeing. You know, William says, look, Airbus 380 had its share of problems with wing cracks and engine failures, not just Boeing that has problems with a new plane. Gustavo says, forgive me if I'm wrong, but didn't the 757 debut with bad publicity over minor issues? Today it's the plane most of us board when we board a plane. Another listener says, the market doesn't seem too concerned. Stock is up from, to 77 or 74. So there's all that. On the other side, here are these powerful lithium batteries, these stories of just how volatile they can be. And right now, Richard Abulafia, what is Boeing's strategy for dealing with these in flight when they, I don't know if blow up is the right word, but when things catch fire?
Well, I think first of all, the confidence the market, the customers, and the traveling public seem to be showing is almost certainly well-placed. Mm. Boeing does not get it wrong, and ultimately this looks like a very promising aircraft, both from an economic standpoint, from a passenger experience standpoint. Having said that, the 3.5-year delay to entry into service from the original plan is completely unprecedented, nothing like it. And the, temporary certification pulling is also unprecedented for a Boeing jet, and only the third time in jetliner history. This plane will recover. It's virtually guaranteed.
But look at this battery with us. As I understand it, it's well known that these batteries can have trouble, these lithium-ion batteries, the big ones especially. This is a very big one, I guess, for in-flight use. And what the plane is designed, Matthew, so that if there's trouble, the fire is supposed to be contained and any fumes, smoke that come off it are supposed to be vented of the plane?
I got to say, it's not that big. It stores about 1.4 kilowatt hours. The lead acid battery in my Ford Taurus stores about two-thirds that much. The battery pack, the lithium-ion battery pack in the Chevy Volt stores 16 kilowatt hours. It's bigger than what's in my laptop and my cell phone, etc., but it's not humongous. This is not a brand new technology, and in addition, if you install it in the plane, as opposed to shipping a pallet full of the batteries in the cargo compartment or carrying it on in your laptop, at least it's wired into the plane, and if there's a problem with it, you're going to get a cockpit warning light. There are worse things in the world, like, for instance, loading on a pallet of lithium-ion batteries that somebody had jostled. They take a long time to develop problems. Look at the Chevy Volt. That battery burned 2.5 or 3 weeks after a crash test. And then you get a fire in the cargo compartment. You don't know what it is. You didn't have any warning till you see the smoke. In this case, in the Japan flight that had to divert, the crew had a cockpit indication there was a problem.
But, I mean, we saw the Airline Pilots Association as all this was being going through the certification process and saying they were worried about it, saying, you know, a fire from these devices in any situation is unacceptable, and there's the record of fire.
That's correct, but that doesn't mean that it's impossible to use this technology safely.
So how do you get a handle on this that's going to be acceptable to people, Richard? I mean, you've got this electrolyte in the lithium-ion cell. It's a flammable chemical. The idea is if there's trouble to vent it through relief ports. But the FAA report back in certification said the electrolyte is highly flammable and easily ignites when exposed to an open flame or hot surface. And here we are, all the Dreamliners on the ground. What's the solution?
Well, the odds very heavily favor that some kind of solution will be found, whether it's containment or whether the cells are placed together or divided or any kind of warning system. There is a way, a way almost certainly to make this right. Now, the worst case scenario is a battery system redesign, which would be painful and expensive, and it would probably add 6 months or even 9 months to this process. That would be bad. Of course, you have to see it as part of the broader process of this plane, which was delayed 3.5 years relative to the original schedule. That's basically about the worst case scenario I can think of. But the far more likely scenario is that they find a way, a combination of safeguards and warning systems and whatever else, and containment to make this work.
Jim in Simsbury, Connecticut. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that we're all kind of saying the same thing, namely that these aircraft systems, whether you're talking the electrical part, the composite part, pushing the envelope and aerodynamics and flight controls and things of that nature, we're kind of at a point of diminishing returns with a system far, far more complex than people are familiar with in their everyday life. Yet, the American public is perfectly happy getting on these highly complex machines day in and day out. We just have to accept that when you make very, very complex systems, when you get up into diminishing returns on the improvements you can make, when you build in the economics of saying that you need to have sourcing in a variety of countries in order to have it accepted by these countries, and then you have to put all this together somehow or another, it's kind of surprising actually you're able to pull it off.
No, it is kind of a miracle, and yet these are the miracles a lot of modern life is built around. I don't know about diminishing returns, though, Jim. I mean, this is supposed to have a 20% fuel savings. That's a pretty big deal.
Oh, it is. No question about it. But if you look at what had to go into the changes in order to get that fuel savings, you had to have engines that were made in a far more careful manner with higher operating temperatures in the turbine area, with advanced fuel controls and so on.
Yep.
You had to have a much lighter machine. You had to have a whole change to the flight process.
Jim, the same is true of my car. I mean, I had a car with a carburetor. I could work on it. Now it's got fuel injectors. It's got software running it. I don't dream of understanding. That's the nature of improvement. And my car, by the way, is a whole lot cleaner and a whole lot more fuel efficient than what preceded it. Why single out aviation? It's true if the car breaks down, I don't plunge from 30,000 feet. But we do have the ability to manage complex systems. And we should not expect that the average person is going to be able to understand every aspect of the system that he relies on.
No, I agree. Still, I mean, it's interesting, Jim's point, you know, we get more and more sophisticated, and out there we go. And in this case, yes, our cars are more sophisticated, too. Many parts of life, but that 30,000-foot plunge is no small item. And here, we've got 50 of these on the ground, and I don't know what happens to the 800 order. So people are watching closely. One more, David in Cambridge, Massachusetts. David, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments. One is the 787 was introduced as the Prius of the skies because of the 20% fuel savings. Now, when you're talking about one of the reasons why I think they've had such a it's been a challenge for them is that this is an airplane that has been sourced out with the South Carolina manufacturing and also throughout the globe in terms of bringing all the parts together in Everett to construct the plane. Yes, composite, that's difficult. You're dealing with a new material, et cetera, but I think I'd like your guests to discuss that particular point, what the outsourcing did in terms of the impact upon this. Now, one of the other things I wanted to mention is that you were talking about your cars evolved, and yeah, we've got fuel injectors as opposed to carburetors. However, if you look at aviation, the number one plane in the sky right now is the 737.
Yeah.
737 was manufactured or produced by Boeing, I think, on the drawing board in 65, and it was rolled out in 68. It has gone through, obviously, improvements in next generations, et cetera. And the backlog on orders on that is sensational. That's the backbone of all the airlines in the United States. Most of the airlines in the United States are
A real workhorse there and has been a real profit maker for Boeing. We're coming up on a break here. Let me get an answer, David, on your question. I mean, definitely outsourcing all over the place here. Wingtips in Korea, cabin lighting in Germany, cargo doors in Sweden, escape slides in New Jersey, landing gear in France. Richard Abulafi, were you suggesting earlier that over time Boeing may consolidate more of that back in the U.S.?
No, I really don't think so. You know, there's always been a very heavy level of outsourcing, and I don't think anybody except for, you know, General Motors 1952 would argue that an aircraft company or indeed the manufacturer of any complex piece of equipment would build their own battery or their own electrical system. You know, that's something you leave to the experts. And as for the structures, you know, it's always been done that way. The entire body of the 747 back in the 60s was outsourced. And the 777 is very heavily built in Japan.
What about the battery system here? I mean, you've got a Japanese company at the heart of it. You've got a French firm involved. You've got this testing in Arizona. Could that be consolidated for safety?
That's always been done by people who are specialists. I think what's different this time, though, is that a lot of the integration and design work was outsourced. And so I think in the future, Boeing might want to keep more of that in-house, the sort of core domain knowledge about how to integrate all of the systems together. They counted on their big risk-sharing partners to put all of the subcomponents into the stuff, their structures, and to design many of the technical features of these structures and then have it all fit together. That's the part of the outsourcing process that didn't work so great. But the idea of actually having other people build crucial components, that's been around. I don't think that's going to change. It seems to make a lot of industrial sense.
Matthew, I wonder, we got a break coming up here, but I wonder if they're wishing in Everett right now they didn't have more of that right under their hands as they try and get these back in the skies.
The same thing is said of the Federal Aviation Administration. Does it have the in-house talent to analyze all the new kinds of technologies and systems it has to deal with?
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Boeing's Dreamliner mess and the grounding of a superplane. Richard Abulafi is with us from the Teal Group in Washington, D.C. Matthew Wald of the New York Times covers aviation is with us. Lots of concern about this. 800 more on order, 50 on the ground waiting for this to be cleaned up. In the Department of Transportation press conference 10-12 days ago, Executive VP of Boeing, Ray Conner, said Boeing is taking all these issues very seriously.
Every new commercial airplane has issues as it enters service. And none of these in-service issues have ever seen thus far alters or our complete confidence in the 787. We are fully committed to resolving any issue that affects the reliability of our airplanes.
And at a luncheon at the Aero Club in Washington yesterday, the Treasury Transportation Secretary LaHood wanted to make clear that American aviation is still in great shape.
Today, the American aviation industry is strong.
and it's getting stronger. More people are flying, more cargo is being shipped around the world. American aviation is better positioned to take on global competitors, support economic growth, and keep America moving.
Well, we hope so, because it's a big chunk of export earnings for this country. Let's go out Boeing way. With us from Seattle right now is Dominic Gates. He's aerospace reporter for the Seattle Times. Dominic Gates, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Your story in the paper today, I guess, got a lot of attention. This looking back to this 2006 lab test where you had an explosion and a fire in the Arizona lab working on the technology related to this battery, burned the whole place down. What was it that that caught fire there, and what was the problem?
Well, it was a 787 prototype battery connected to charging equipment that the company down there was testing, and it ignited, and as you say, it started this terrible fire. Two people tried to put it out with fire extinguishers, couldn't do it, burned the whole building down. But we bring this up now, obviously, because of the latest incidents. Mm-hmm. The likelihood is that test was due to the fact that it failed was due to equipment being set up wrongly, although it hasn't been ruled out that there was a battery defect as well. So Boeing, I put that in the story just to emphasize that these batteries contain a lot of energy, and if something goes wrong, there can be a huge impact. So Boeing's engineers have had to design the airplane to make sure that does not happen. And Mike Sinnott, in detail last week, outlined those safety features. That the one thing that Boeing must prevent happening is overcharging of the battery. That the battery that exploded in Arizona most certainly was overcharged. And that's when you get the most energy released. Sinnott explained that Boeing has four independent charging monitors that shut the battery down if it goes overcharged. So that essentially that can't happen on board the plane.
Mike Sinnott.
The good news for Boeing yesterday was that the regulators in both Japan and the U.S. are now saying that in both incidents, the one in Boston and the one in Japan, where the batteries at least smoldered and in one case set fire, that they were not overcharged. So we're talking about a lesser event, but still Boeing's engineers have to control that too.
Could you just walk us through the electrical system here? I mean, these are famously much more driven by electrical systems, the Dreamliners. But they've got generators on board for most of that power. So what's the division of labor between the battery-produced electricity and the generator-produced, Dominic?
Well, I think as Richard explained a short time ago, these batteries are essentially backups, and the battery at the back is used to start the APU, which is a little turbine engine at the back of the plane, which is used when it's on the ground. But you could actually start that APU with a ground power supply. They wheel over a ground car to the plane. So the battery is mostly for backup in an emergency, but there are six independent generators of electricity on this airplane because it does use a lot more electricity, four times more than a 777, which is a much larger airplane, the last new airplane that Boeing built. So Boeing needed a solution that could provide a lot of energy, could do it in a compact box that was light and would recharge quickly. Lithium-ion technology was the way to go, and they had to build in all these safety features. The fact is that the systems on the plane are much more powered by electricity than on other planes. On other planes, they use pneumatic power much more, but on this one, everything from the brakes and the cabin air, they're all powered by electricity. And so they need the extra power. They needed these powerful batteries. As the Arizona test fire showed, these batteries have to be harnessed in a very safe way to avoid problems.
And that's the state of the art in the industry, as we see anyway in passenger airliners right now. Brandon in Hartford, Connecticut's calling. Brandon, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
The reason for my call is my father actually builds these new APUs that are going to be going on the Dreamliner.
What is an APU, Brandon? I heard that from... What is an APU?
It's an emergency backup electricity, basically.
Okay.
That all these planes, since the one crashed in the Hudson, ever since then, I guess that one failed. So they've been, you know, redoing them ever since then. And I was wondering if the guy on the phone would know if something with the new APUs might have affected what happened with the lithium-ion batteries.
Like what? What are you suggesting, Brandon? What do you know?
Well, this, since it is a whole new system with the APUs, from what I understand at least, I was wondering if, you know, maybe it was overcharging the batteries, or maybe it had something directly to do with what happened with these batteries.
Could I clarify? This is Matt Wald.
Yes, please,
the
Matt.
The battery in the back of the plane is a starter battery for the APU, just the way my Ford Taurus has a starter battery.
And what's an APU, Matt? I'm sorry.
Okay, it's a little generator in the tail. It's often used on the ground. If the engines under the wing aren't running.
Auxiliary power unit, is that what we mean?
You need electricity to run the cabin air conditioning system, to run plane systems. And if the main engines under the wing aren't running, you start up the little one in the back. It can be used in emergencies, but it has a regular non-emergency routine function.
Mm-hmm.
The other battery on the plane that's in forward is a backup system to power the cockpit instruments. It is true that the 787 is a lot more electrically based. However, if you and I go out to the airport and get on a new 737, it also has a starter battery for the auxiliary power unit for the APU, and it also has a battery for cockpit instruments. The fact that they've got a lot of electric motors in the 787 that where other planes have hydraulics, that's correct, but that's not why this plane has these two batteries.
Dominic Gates, what is the best current thinking about why these two problems occurred so far?
Well, let me just add to what Matthew said. Mm-hmm. I don't think, for example, the incident in Japan, which happened in flight, was anything to do with the APU. The APU wouldn't have been functioning at that time.
Mm.
Yes, in Boston, the airplane was on the ground. A maintenance crew was on the jet, and so the APU was on, as far as I know, and was connected to that battery that burned. But we still, nobody can tell you right now what caused this, and that's why Boeing's in such a tough spot. The fact is, this is going to be fixed. There's no way it's not going to be fixed. But until the NTSB and their counterparts in Japan can say precisely what went wrong, then none of us can be sure exactly how they're going to do it. But Richard is right. This is a component which, in the end, in the worst-case scenario, you could swap out. When the A380 last year, the Airbus Super Jumbo jet, when it had cracks in the brackets that connect the wing ribs, fixing that is like a major, major thing. You're talking infrastructure and going into the plane. In the end, if this battery turns out to be something they can fix. And it's a component. They can take it out and put in another battery system.
A different kind entirely. I mean, I'm reading here Don Sadoway at MIT works in batteries saying, why even go for it? They save maybe 60 pounds by going for this particular type. Use a heavier one. Get it in there and get rid of the problem.
Well, Boeing went for the best solution, and I think they still have faith in it, and I think they'll try to make it work. I think they'll only swap it out if it's proven that there's something wrong here with this design.
What's the sense in your neck of the woods, Dominic, out around Everett, about the grounding? Are most Boeing people on board with that? Or do they think we've become too skittish? I mean, you can easily find people saying, we don't have the chutzpah to innovate anymore. Of course there's going to be hiccups. This is all manageable. Why are they all on the ground? Do you hear that kind of talk in your neighborhood, Dominic?
Well, I think Boeing employees, this has hit morale because it's a horrible start to the new year. This was going to be a great year for Boeing.
Mm-hmm.
They're number one in the world now with sales and deliveries. They've got a huge ramp up ahead of them. So much work to do, so much hiring here. So this was going to be a great year. And suddenly we've got this crisis and the planes are grounded. So yes, of course it's hit morale. As for the leadership initially, I have to say, it's clear, and I reported this on Sunday, the leadership of the company felt that the grounding was too drastic a step and wasn't necessary. I mean, Boeing didn't ground the plane, the government grounded it.
Of course.
But now I think they realize that this has to be fixed in order to protect the reputation of both the airplane and the company. They can't afford to send it up again and have something else happen with the battery.
Richard Abulafia, what about Boeing's competitive position? Number one in the world now, but of course there's a stiff competitor in Airbus, China. We read, just this week we're reading again, pushing hard on the aviation front. What about Boeing's competitive slot?
You know, this is an industry with extremely high barriers to entry and an industry that really favors critical mass. And there's a reason that small niche companies don't decide to build a jet and hope to make a go of it. At the end of the day, Boeing is insulated from technological and market risks like this because it has so many different revenue and product lines, both on the civil side, the military side, even the space side, whatever else. As a result, financially, they're going to be fine. Their other, as Dominic says, you know, they achieved the number one spot. Very little of that was 787 last year. A lot of it was 777s, 737s, 747s. So you've got a lot of cylinders firing right now. The 787, however, does represent a major challenge, and you get a chance to launch a new jet once a decade.
Yeah.
Even if you're in a duopoly position with critical mass, it's still a once a decade affair, and you'd better get it right. And
reputationally, it's a big deal. Donald in Atkinson, New Hampshire. Donald, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment about the battery technology used. There's an alternative to lithium batteries that has the same power density, which is, you know, with silver cells that have been used in submarines to power torpedoes. They were used to activate the atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima, and NASA uses them. And lithiums are extremely hazardous. I worked a bit on an environmental chamber for NASA, you know, and the thing was designed to handle the force of two hand grenades going off.
Mm-hmm. So what do you take from that, Donald?
Boeing has a management problem. I don't know why they're using lithium battery technology on a jet plane when you have silver batteries that have been out since the 40s.
Matthew Wald, what about it? Alternatives here?
Well, it's not just power density, it's also energy density, which are two different components of a battery. In addition, you can afford to spend more, NASA can afford to spend more, or the Navy can afford to spend more on a torpedo than a competitive plane maker can spend. I want to go back a step here, though. We keep saying battery problem, battery problem, battery problem. It ain't so. We don't know what this problem is. We know it was expressed by damage to the battery, but it may turn out to be a different part of the system. It is true that lithium ion, if overheated, you get a runaway reaction. You get either smoke or fire more easily than in other kinds of batteries, but you can do real damage with other kinds of batteries, and we got to figure out whether the problem originates in the fact that it's lithium ion. We don't know that yet.
But elaborate on that. I mean, the burned out battery casing, that was where the lithium ion battery was, right? Isn't it clear that wherever the problem started, it extended to the lithium ion battery, Matt?
That's correct. But what is the root cause? You don't want to go out and replace the battery if that isn't the root cause. You want to make sure you've identified the root cause and fixed it.
Dominic, what are you hearing on that front?
Well, Matthew's right. We still have to wait for the root cause, and it could be something more systematic. But the word from the Japanese regulators and from the NTSB here that the external supply didn't seem to be overcharging the battery.
Mm-hmm. Whoa, wait, Dominic, hold on. Dominic, they didn't say it wasn't. What they said was it didn't go over voltage. That doesn't mean that the rate wasn't too fast. There are other parameters here that have not been ruled out.
Right, but they did say yesterday that they think it wasn't overcharged. Now, they haven't definitively established that, but it seems likely that that wasn't the case, and therefore things are pointing at the battery going wrong. Probably something inside the battery, probably a manufacturing defect. And to be honest, if it turns out to be that, that's probably the best news for Boeing, because you can fix it with quality control of the battery factory.
Richard Abulafia, I guess the thing that struck a lot of people in this is, after all the anticipation of the Dreamliner, the fact of a problem at all. I think a lot of regular flyers think to themselves, this will have been tested so thoroughly by the time you're loading hundreds of passengers on board that it's unthinkable that you'd have this kind of question and problem. I mean, how can that happen, Richard?
Well, I understand why people would think that. I mean, it certainly does appear to be an issue. On the other hand, you look at this aircraft and there are so many complex systems, and they're interdependent, truly interdependent. They really have pushed the art here in so many ways that eventually it's quite conceivable that something would come up. The other thing is that, as Dominic says, this might be a manufacturing issue. And yeah, that should have been caught in testing. But again, coming back to the way they built 50 or so planes before the type entered service, I mean, that's a recipe for not having a checklist in place. That's a recipe for missing defects. So I think it could easily come back to a first batch of 50 planes that will require extensive retrofit, and then they'll move on and build a much better aircraft.
Well, we'll be watching. Everybody eager, maybe one day, to get on board, enjoy those big windows and that nice cabin, but without any fire on board. Grateful to all three of you for opening our eyes to the whole picture here. Richard Abulafia with the Teal Group, thanks a lot for joining us, Richard.
It's a pleasure.
Dominic Gates at the Seattle Times in Seattle. Dominic, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
And Matthew Wald at the New York Times in Washington. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, tomorrow, all the news of the week in review right here. Join us. Thanks for being here today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.